This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Live younger, look younger, feel younger at GCNLife.com. Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So we have a special combination today. Gene Randall, and we have Jerome Clark, who recently had published the third edition of his UFO encyclopedia. Welcome back, Jerry. Good to hear from you.
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Now, before we go on here, and I wanted to discuss the book and what changes are made, was there ever hope of having a version that people can afford?
You know, I have battled for that for years. I've wanted a trade paperback version published at an affordable price. And it's unfortunately not a decision that's in my hands, but I've tried everything that I could do to persuade the publisher that this is a good idea, to no avail, sadly. I won't quit, and I hope one day to succeed, but so far, nothing's happening. The book is so expensive because it's marketed to the reference book, so in other words, it appears in libraries and institutions, and deep-pocketed ufologists, but the rest of us, if I were not the author, I couldn't afford a copy.
For those who are wondering, the Amazon discount price, is $147.25. The discount price, I think it lists for $155. But we're not talking with a casual book here. We're talking about two or three volumes, is it?
Two volumes.
Two volumes, 1,520 pages.
And small print.
Oh, just like a college textbook.
It's heavy on all levels of heavy.
That's for the current one. If you want to get a copy of the second edition, your previous one, I was looking on Amazon, and there's one on there going, did you know this, for over $1,000?
Oh, I don't even want to think about that. Yeah, that was published in 1998, 20 years ago.
So what has 20 years separation between edition number two and edition number three? What has that wrought in terms of changed content?
Well, for one thing, we understand the early history of the phenomenon much better than we did in 1998. For one thing, the Internet gave us access to all kinds of archives, newspaper archives, other kinds of archives, which really opened up the early history of ufology to us. The UFO phenomena of the 19th century and the early pre 1947, 20th century, it opened up official documents so we have a clearer idea of what the Air Force, for example, was up to. And so it's a much fuller history of the past. And of course, you know, the history has plugged along since 1998. But I think that the book really is pretty much a state of the art. Now, a full history of ufology and the UFO phenomenon probably would comprise about 10 volumes of the size of the current two, but that nobody's going to publish 10 volumes, and no sane human being would want to write it. The third edition of the UFO Encyclopedia really opens up a lot of stuff.
Can you give us some more examples of what's being changed here? Because I think listeners want to know, if you're going to save up $147.50 for the book, and maybe someone with deeper pockets than we have wants to buy you a Christmas present or a Hanukkah present or something, might want to buy this book. What are they going to get? What significant things can we talk about?
Well, for example, a particular interest of mine is the airship phenomenon, which was really a proto-UFO phenomenon that began in the latter half of the 19th century and stretched into the first couple of decades of the 20th, and it involved sightings of dirigible-like objects, sometimes with occupants that did not belong there. There were no dirigibles in America in the late 19th century, yet they were cited by the thousands and documented in newspaper articles voluminously. And this is a phenomenon that was recognized first by Charles Fort, who realized that this was a national phenomenon, even an international phenomenon. So his book, New Lands, published in 1923, is the first coverage of this particular aerial anomaly between book covers. And from the very first UFO books, going back to 1950, there was some acknowledgement of airship sightings. Since the era of the internet, we've had access to thousands of newspaper and other archives. So we have all kinds of sightings, all kinds of encounters, all kinds of things that we didn't know about before. We didn't even know about in 1998 when I was finishing up the second edition. So there are lots of reports of all kinds of things, including not only airships, but more modern UFO-like objects seen and recorded in the 19th century. We have Men in Black stories. We have reports of alien occupants of UFOs, even in the 19th century. And I tried to include as much of this as I could. My interests are primarily focused on the pre-1947 history. So there's a lot of that in the book. There's also Brad Sparks, who contributed to the book, also done an enormous amount of study into the radar visual sightings, some of them not even known about because they were just dropped deep into the official archives, but he dug them out and he found them. And we have full accounts of radar visual cases and other cases. A really good piece on the abduction phenomenon written by Eddie Bullard, who's a folklorist with a sympathetic interest in UFOs. It's a real work of scholarship, if I do say so myself. I wrote about 80% of the book myself, and the rest is contributors like Brad Sparks, who's an aerospace engineer, Tom Tilleen, who's a student of radar visual cases, Brad Sparks, who's interested in cases that involve physical evidence, and we have contributions from Bill Chalker in Australia and Tiago Luiz Ticchetti from Brazil. So there's an enormous amount of material, and much of it will not be familiar even to hardcore ufologists. So if you can afford the book or find some way to get a copy, you'll learn a lot. And it'll be also a handy reference book with full accounts of known cases, but with more detail and sometimes new information about them. It was an exhausting thing to do, and I hope never to write another one. But it is, I think, a lasting contribution to the serious literature.
Now, looking at cases, and I want to get into the folklore later, but looking into different cases, did you find any specific cases there where the outcome changed, where it may have been an unknown in previous editions of the book? But now, you know, maybe there's a logical explanation. And just to understand, we have about a minute left for this segment.
I'll answer briefly. They went both ways. Some cases that look to be explained 20 years later don't look explained. Some that seemed unexplained now seem explainable, most prominently Roswell in the latter category.
All right.
And crash retrieval cases.
Well, that's the point here, too, that I've always worried about here. Over the years, we've had claims of crash retrievals, and they never seem to hold up once you have investigations. Certainly Aztec died a long time ago, as far as I'm concerned, although it has that Dracula aspect where you stick a stake in it, as someone once said on the show, and it comes back to life, which reminds me of the scene in an old Universal horror film from the 40s where someone is exhibiting Dracula, the skeleton of Dracula, and in a fit of anger, the mad scientist pulls the stake out of Dracula's heart. And it comes back to life, as John Carradine, by the way. We have Jerome Clark. He's talked about the third edition of his UFO encyclopedia. And we're talking about specifically things that have changed over the years in terms of research. With Gene and Randall, you're in
the Paracast.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got, like, I guess 60 or so different items, and entails T-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of T-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great T-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
Trading involves financial risk and is not suitable for all investors.
Marijuana has unleashed a green gold rush across our nation. It's creating $10.8 billion in new wealth a year. And every day, it's transforming more and more Americans into millionaires. Former Speaker of the House John Boehner reveals how you could become one of them. Join him online for the American Cannabis Summit. Attendance is 100% free, but space is limited. Join online at www.acs2018.com. John Boehner and an esteemed panel will reveal which cannabis stocks are primed to deliver life-changing windfalls. Plus, they will show you how to become a cannabis angel investor, backing the hottest startups before they potentially become worth billions of dollars.
To join the American Cannabis Summit, visit acs2018.com or text JOIN to 76280. Don't miss this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Text JOIN to 76280. Text JOIN to 76280 now.
By now you know that wireless technology like cell phones do in fact pose dangers to the health and privacy of everyone. Lockit Pocket's wide range of products are unmatched in providing the protection you deserve. No scare tactics, just common sense. LockitPocket.com offers quality American-made options to alleviate and eliminate these invisible dangers. Learn more at LockitPocket.com or call 888-315-9618. LockitPocket.com, enhancing health and privacy.
Hello, this is Dr. Bill Deagle, MD of NutraMedical.com, announcing the breakthrough Red Deer Velvet DR. It delivers the protective building blocks of all organs and tissues, allowing your own stem cells as architects and engineers to regenerate you. Not since fetal life, when aging does not occur, has such an amazing NutraMed been available to help heal you and regenerate you. Anti-aging requires that you correct mineral, activated nutraceutical, and jump the gene defects and poor diet you have to deliver the cellular tools for regeneration. You must remove old damaged cells and replace them with your young healthy cells to wind the biological clock to a younger you. Order your Red Deer Velvet DR now at NutraMedical.com 24/7 or 888-212-8871. That's NutriMedical, N-U-T-R-I, Medical, M-E-D-I-C-A-L.com. Or call our order line, 888-212-8871.
Water is the single most important thing your body needs, so you want to be sure it's the purest for you and your family. For over 14 years, thousands have depended on Berkey Clean Water. The Berkey guy has you covered at home, work, and on the go. With water filtration systems of every size for every budget, now GCN listeners receive 10% off ceramic filter systems using code GCN at GoBerkey.com or call 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Well, John Carradine did not speak, by the way, as Dracula with an accent. He appeared in House of Dracula and House of Frankenstein. And in neither case did he at all speak in anything but a mid-American stage English accent. Anyway.
Well, but, good for him. I have a feeling that Bela Lugosi was probably speaking as he spoke off stage.
Well, I also thought here, too, that the character of Dracula in the book, wouldn't it have been more like John Carradine in terms of appearance, kind of this very kind of somewhat thin, emaciated look? But let's get back to the cases that have been solved. I said, of course, that Aztec never survived much investigation.
Well, I don't think it was ever standing, actually. I was just shocked at the revival of a case that has long struck me as just transparently bogus.
Well, the read the book that was written, the more recent book that was written on the subject, and it was so lacking in evidence and a lot of filler. And then there was a new edition, because that was a self-published book, and the new edition didn't have much more to offer. In fact, I asked the author, could you tell me what's changed in the new edition of the book so I don't have to read the whole thing again, because I read about half a chapter and read the same. And he could tell me. He said, well, there are a lot of changes. And I said, what are they? So let's talk about Roswell, because I think to some of us, the definitive book on Roswell was Roswell in the 21st Century, where Kevin D. Randall was finding that a number of the pieces of evidence that seemed to be credible were less credible. What do you find explains Roswell now, Jerry?
Okay, well, I wanted to say that I wrote a lacerating review of Scott Ramsey's Aztec book in the Journal of Scientific Exploration some years ago. It's not a serious book. Now, there have been, as we know, many books written on Roswell, pro and con. And I agree with you that the definitive book on the subject, if you read one book on Roswell, it should be Kevin Randall's Roswell in the 21st Century, which is really a definitive book. One thing that gives it its power is that Randall is not a debunker. In fact, before this, he'd written pro-Roswell books. So this is a guy who is not just out there to debunk it. It doesn't have his mind made up. He's an intellectually honest guy whose mind changed as the evidence changed. And Kevin Randall found that some of the key informants, particularly those talking about bodies and in the wreckage, were lying. They were hoaxers. And moreover, these aspects of the story didn't even enter the story until the 1970s. The Roswell story that we were getting in recent decades was part of an evolving legend. And the evidence just grew thinner and thinner as time went by. And there were also a priori reasons to question it. For example, if something like this had happened, if a spaceship had crashed in July 1947, given us access to a remarkable advanced new technology, it would not have been possible to cover that. You could cover up the precipitating event, the crash of a spaceship, arguably, but you couldn't cover up the technological developments that would inevitably follow. We have a history of technology. We know where the devices that we use in our daily life, the technical devices, come from. They have a clear history. We have nothing in the history of technology that comes out of nowhere, that is just completely inexplicable, like some kind of enormous breakthrough that we can't explain via previous technological developments.
I want to ask you about that because I think it's very important, because we have, of course, the day after Roswell, the Philip Corso, Bill Burns book, where such inventions as printed circuits and night vision goggles, which have a defined history that we all know about, were supposedly due to reverse engineered alien technology. On the other hand, would it be possible to some degree for reverse engineered technology to enhance what we know about something we're working on? And also, wouldn't it be possible for us to distort the history so that things seem to have been developed earlier than they really were, but they were really attributed to something?
No, I don't think that's possible, because these things are so incredibly documented with so much material that goes into technological development. It is enormously documented beyond, you know, almost our ability to comprehend. And to fix that, you'd have to fake that, you'd have to go in deep into conspiracy theory, and I refuse to do that. There's no reason to do it. You know, the Roswell story is a bunch of interesting stories whose precipitating event is still not entirely explained. We still don't know what happened in Roswell. Something happened. Something crashed. But I think by now we can be pretty certain that it was not an extraterrestrial spacecraft bearing an extraordinary advanced technology. We just don't know. Maybe one day we will. And the explanation will probably be interesting. But I think we can discard the from our space interpretation.
Speaking of interesting, would that mean maybe a test aircraft or something of that nature?
Something like that, yes.
Sure. Now, the thing here to also bear in mind is the way this legend is propagated. Like, for example, Kevin Randall's book. I think on the part of many fellow researchers who had been following Roswell, landed like a thud. I thought it was a really, really good way to kind of wrap up Roswell for the time being, to realize that maybe something happened there, but it wasn't anything related to alien spacecraft. But we still have the same people writing the same stuff about this top secret conspiracy to keep our knowledge of Roswell hidden. Of course, it's possible the government keeps things top secret because of secret aircraft and things like that they don't want us to know about. But I remember being pitched on a book, I think by Don Schmidt, and maybe I'm wrong, but I was pitched on a book from a publicist, and I said, what's new? What is new? What can you tell us that's going to give us more evidence, if there is any evidence, about Roswell? And I couldn't get an answer. It's kind of like Scott Ramsey's book, where I asked Scott Ramsey, okay, you got a really professional published version of the book that you self-published, but you can't tell me what's changed other than it looks nicer and maybe they cleaned up the editing a little bit. But what is different? It's the same thing. You can't get the answers. But why are we still having Roswell conventions?
Apparently people want to continue believing in it. I think that if anything in ufology was destined for benign neglect, it's Roswell. I don't think that Roswell is one of those subjects that if someone brings it up, my eyes glaze over, because it's for exactly the reasons that you've just said. There's nothing new, and there won't be anything new, at least in any foreseeable future, I'm sure.
We'll go into that and more. We have Jerome Clark, who is the author of the third edition of UFO Encyclopedia with some helpers. With Gene and Randall, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Most of you know that heart disease is the number one silent killer in the U.S. What if I told you for just $54.95 a month you could fight against heart disease naturally? At Heart and Body Extract, we've been helping thousands of people get back to a healthier heart. Don't just take my word for it. Check out all of the success stories at hbextract.com. Or to order, call 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. hbextract.com. Don't risk it when you can take charge of it.
Hear that? That's the sound of a house being trashed while a gang of thieves ransack the place. And what they don't steal will be destroyed.
This year, resolve not to be the next victim of a break-in. Go to faketv.com and discover a device that creates the illusion someone inside is watching TV, even when you're miles away. Security is a mindset, and fake TV should be part of your security solution. Be vigilant, but not fearful. faketv.com.
USA Radio News. President Donald Trump on Saturday was in Northern California to see firsthand the grief and devastation from the deadliest U.S. wildfire in a century. Authorities confirmed at least 71 people are dead, and many people are still missing as they had to evacuate their home. President Trump in California on Saturday.
I know Gavin's committed. We're all committed. I'm committed to make sure that we get all of this cleaned out and protected. Got to take care of the floors, you know, the floors of the forest. Very important.
Democrat Andrew Gillum officially conceded to Republican former Congressman Ron DeSantis in Florida's gubernatorial race, as a recount of votes showed a margin Gillum was unlikely to close. WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange will not willingly travel to the United States to face charges filed under a seal against him. That's at least according to his attorney. Assange is currently in the Ecuadorian embassy in London. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Got an old car? You can donate it, whether it's running or not, to the United Breast Cancer Foundation and save a life. They'll even come and pick it up for free. The United Breast Cancer Foundation has saved hundreds of women's lives through their free or low-cost breast screen exams. But now they need your help. The United Breast Cancer Foundation wants to save more lives through early detection by offering women free or low-cost breast screening exams. And donating your old car, SUV, or truck, whether it's running or not, helps pay for them. Plus, you get a charitable tax deduction. Help the United Breast Cancer Foundation save lives by donating your old car, SUV, or truck. Call now for free pickup. 800-280-2144. 800-280-2144. 800-280-2144. Call right now. That number again is 800-280-2144.
Warning, if you're drowning in debt you can't afford, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to pay it all back, because you don't. What the credit card companies don't want you to know is that there's actually a way to get debt-free without paying off your entire debt or going bankrupt. If you have $5,000 or more in credit card debt, you now have the right to let us settle that debt for a fraction of what you owe. For free information, call Credit Associates now. 1-800-959-5759. We'll even show you how much money you could save. If you can't afford to pay off all your debt, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to. Call Credit Associates now for free information on how to get debt-free faster than you ever thought possible without debt consolidation or bankruptcy. We depend on your success and offer a guarantee, so there's no risk. For free information, call now. 1-800-959-5759. That's 1-800-959-5759. 1-800-959-5759.
Hey, this is Marie D. Jones, the author of This Book Is From the Future, and you are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
I'm glad he ditched the Lugosi voice. I don't even want to try my Lugosi voice. Jerry, final visit there, unless we find something about what really happened at Roswell. That's the end of it. But if it was a secret aircraft, after 70 years, why not just say that?
Well, that's a really interesting question. And it may have a fairly banal answer. It may be that the records are lost, that the people involved in the project are long dead. And there's just no way to find it. It was really important at the time. And of course, this was in the early days of the Cold War, and much was happening in terms of national defense, national security. And maybe what seemed really important, worth covering up at the time, just got lost and forgotten. And maybe that, or maybe there was some aspect that made the crash of the presumed vehicle politically troublesome. We just don't know. I mean, I would like to know. I think it'd be interesting. Would add to our understanding of the history that happened just after World War II. But I think that it's just a curiosity of history at this point. It's nothing with which ufologists need to concern themselves. Ufologists have plenty of things to deal with. I don't think chasing, you know, the myth of a Roswell spacecraft is one of them. At one point, I don't blame them for trying to figure out what happened. At first, it looked rather intriguing. But I think we've run this one to ground.
Is there any crash case out there that passes the smell test?
I don't think so. I mean, there are stories where you talk with people and they seem sincere. But we have a long history of talking with people who seem sincere, but what they're saying doesn't make sense and it doesn't add up and doesn't stand up to scrutiny. And you can only speculate, you know, what really happened or what their motives are. But it just doesn't add up to anything. And we've just had so much experience with this by now that it's just in the UFO Encyclopedia, I have wrote a long entry on crash retrieval lore. And some of these stories are interesting. But I don't have any confidence that they mean anything other than people's memories, their experiences, however grounded or not grounded in reality. But there just is no reason to believe there are crash saucers. Well, I wish there were. That would be really interesting. And at one time, I was more open-minded about it than I am now. But I think that at some point, we just have to acknowledge that this hasn't gone anywhere.
Yeah, we don't have the verifiable, scientifically valid material evidence to prove that there was any sort of crashed alien craft. That's true. But with Roswell, at least we know something actually did happen.
Yes.
You know, I don't get the impression that Brazel and his son were lying about picking up actual bits of material and bringing it in.
It's also true that the military went to considerable length to shut up the primary witnesses. That much seems established. But what isn't established is exactly what started all of this and what it was and why it was seemed so important to keep it secret.
Right, and Mogul doesn't seem to add up either, so...
The Mogul explanation is just bogus. It's just a nothing burger.
So what we have there is we still have a mystery, but I think it's like, I would agree with you, it's not safe to simply jump to the conclusion that it was some sort of an alien craft. We don't necessarily know what it was at this point, and until we have more information, or they tell us about whatever that metal was that was recovered, was it really some sort of memory metal? Could it really not be cut with a torch or dented with a hammer? That sort of thing.
Exactly. You know, when people ask me what Roswell was or is, I say a curiosity of history. It's just something that happened we don't have a grip on yet. And so what we can do is just eliminate hypothesis. And I think that for some time now we have been able to eliminate the extraterrestrial hypothesis concerning the nature of the event. But we can't explain the event itself.
Well, if we can't explain it, how can we eliminate it then?
It works in the way that you test a hypothesis. Something happens that requires an explanation, and you test one hypothesis after another to explain what's happened. That this is the way science works, the way historical inquiry works. And just because we can't explain Roswell doesn't mean that all possibilities are still open. In fact, the one explanation that has been the most rigorously and fully investigated is the idea that it was a spaceship. And now I think the evidence suggests that it was no such thing. It's the other hypotheses that might be worth giving the same attention that we gave the extraterrestrial hypothesis, such as that it was some kind of secret aircraft that had some particular quality that caused officials to want to classify it and threaten people who might talk about it. That's the next hypothesis we should be investigating if we want to pay any attention to Roswell. But we don't necessarily do it as ufologists. People can do it as aerospace historians, Cold War historians, historians of technology. There are other approaches to it. The one approach that hasn't gotten us anywhere is the extraterrestrial one.
Right. But if it is a craft, so we've got, okay, if it's made by humans, it's an advanced craft of some kind. Well, we don't know that it was made by humans, so why is it safe to rule out that it wasn't made by humans?
What evidence is there that it wasn't made by humans? Are you saying that because we have no evidence, we can speculate that it was by extraterrestrials? I'm saying that we have plenty of evidence that it wasn't by extraterrestrials. That's the hypothesis we can eliminate by now.
What's the evidence that it wasn't? It seems more that that's like a lack of evidence that it was. And, you know, Friedman would say something to the effect that...
Yeah, I know. And you can say the same about Santa Claus. The absence of evidence is not evidence of absence.
Right.
Apply that to Santa Claus.
That's something frivolous. There was an official Air Force release. We think it's pretty reasonable to believe that Braslow and his son did collect material, along with the army went out there and collected material, that it was classified as secret. There's some pretty suspicious stuff about it. So if we say that, okay, well, how did all that stuff get there if it was some sort of craft? And if we think it's reasonable to believe that they described the markings as something that wasn't in our language or that they recognized, okay, maybe it was Cyrillic or something else, Russian, I don't know. But you would think that people might even recognize that. So there was some strange markings. The materials properties were said to be different, not explainable by current technology that was known at the time. Then again, you know, maybe if it was a secret project, okay, maybe we made it. But then we're still talking about some kind of a craft, and we can't be sure we made it. And it had these unusual properties, so how can we be so sure someone else
Here's how you answer that question. You say, where does the story of the bodies come from? Because the bodies make it conclusive that this is not from the earth. You have not human bodies found amid the wreckage. It turns out that from all available evidence, literally nobody was talking about bodies in 1947, that all the evidence to that effect begins to emerge, the evidence in scare quotes, emerges in the 1970s from people's memories and also from the people who were lying about their memories. If you could find contemporary evidence, in other words, in July 1947, the summer of 1947, or within some reasonable period of weeks and months thereafter, that somebody was making the claim that there were unusual otherworldly bodies associated with a craft in 1947 or 1948, then you'd have a case that this was a spaceship.
Let's do our break. We got Jerome Clark, Randall and Gene, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream that turns out to be a nightmare because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at rockoids.com. That's rockoids, rockoids.com.
Anytime, any place, anywhere. Radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
Homemakers, groceries by mail ships free. Try our amazing bacon. It stores in your pantry. No refrigeration required. Our value-added packaging provides a 10-year shelf life and protects the leanest, thickest, center-cut, fully cooked bacon in America today. Ready to eat right from the pouch or warm and serve. Always priced less than grocery for your everyday use. Savory and delicious. Order today at readytoeatbacon.com. readytoeatbacon.com.
In these uncertain times, it makes sense to have a sustainable backup method to cook food and boil water. If your current plan includes using a fuel-burning stove or cooking over an open fire, then there's a much better way. The Minuteman Rocket Stove is a biomass-burning cooking stove that only requires small quantities of sticks and twigs for fuel. The Minuteman Stove is easy to use, smokeless, portable, powerful, and sustainable for the finest in survival cooking stoves and fire starters made right here in the USA. Go to MinutemanStove.com. That's MinutemanStove.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of My Pillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented My Pillow, I wanted it to where you can move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. My Pillow will get you into that deep REM sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry My Pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever. You can buy one of my pillows and get one absolutely free.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-870-0305 and use promo code GCN. That's MyPillow.com or 800-870-0305 with promo code GCN.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.
This is Robert Hastings, author of UFOs and Nukes, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So the point that Jerome Clark is raising about Roswell is that in 1947, there was no contemporaneous evidence. We had the story in the newspaper that went out over the wire services. They recover a flying disc, and it's really a balloon, and that's the end of it until 30 years later. Of course, we also have that situation to a lesser extent with Aztec, where we had somebody on after the Paracast, Monty Shriver, an engineer and professor, I believe, and he had gone back to a class reunion in Aztec, New Mexico, and nobody had any memory of anything, which is even worse than Roswell, where at least you had memories 30 years later. Jerry?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, as I said, many of these memories are just simply demonstrably untrue. People jumped on the bandwagon and contributed to the story. Now, there are other people who seem to be more truthful than the hoaxers, and they claim memories going back to 1947. But you can't document that. You can't trace these stories with contemporary testimony. Testimony, in other words, back in the summer of 1947. Talking about bodies. The body stories don't emerge into Roswell testimony until the 1970s.
That's kind of moving the goalposts a bit, though. I mean, you know, okay, so we can write off quite a bit of the evidence, so-called evidence, in terms of testimony, but we're still left with this residual amount that is puzzling. And if it still represents some sort of a crash of an object, how can we be sure we can rule out that it wasn't some sort of an alien craft? That's all I'm saying. I still don't see that part.
Well, all I'm saying is that show me that in the late 1940s, somebody was talking about alien bodies and wrote it down. So we have a contemporary record. Why doesn't the story about bodies emerge until the Roswell story itself reemerges? And all of a sudden, there's a whole lot added to the story than was there. If you can show me that there's contemporary evidence, and that's not at all unreasonable to ask for, of bodies in 1947, and documentable testimony from 1947 to 1948, that bodies were seen, then we really have an interesting question to pursue. until that happens, it looks very much as if testimony about bodies emerged as the legend grew. And this is the way legends work. They grow over time.
Sure, but maybe it was just a space probe. Maybe there were no bodies. That wouldn't make it any less interesting, really, to me. You know, I mean, an alien craft of any kind would be amazing.
True, but demonstrate to me that it was any kind of extraterrestrial spacecraft, bodies or no bodies, with evidence stronger than what we have now. I'll reboard the Roswell train, but until that happens, I'm going to be skeptical. It seems to me there are more productive things that we could pay attention to.
Okay,
and also,
yeah,
as I said, there's the a priori problem of technological evolution and the fact that there are no leaps of technological development beginning in July 1947 that we can't otherwise account for. It just seems to me that I have a lot of interest in folklore, aside from my interest in UFOs. You know, I know how folktales grow and how they work, and this looks like a folktale. You know, I'd be glad to be proved wrong, but it doesn't look after all this time that that's going to happen. But if it does, I'll be thrilled.
I've talked to people who are professors and mythology and stuff. We've got one of our members from USI, he's a professor down in Hawaii, and he would say that there tends to be certain elements of truths mixed in with the mythology and folklore. I mean, that doesn't mean we can believe everything, but it's not simply just always made up out of pure fantasy.
That is entirely correct, and I always point out to people that just because something is called folklore, that is not a synonym for fiction. Folklore generally or often has some element, some precipitating experience or event or something that happened in the world on which a larger, more imaginative narrative is constructed. And that's what we're talking about with Roswell. We all agree that something happened, that there was some precipitating event. But what I maintain, and I think that this is the argument that Kevin Randall makes, which I find persuasive, is that that there was an event that we still don't really understand, but an enormous amount of fiction and imaginative narrative grew around it. And so we're talking about the way folktales work.
Oh, sure. That's entirely fair. I think we can go that far. I just can't make the further leap that we can completely write off the idea that it was, you know, something alien, because we still don't know that. So, but up to that point, yeah, absolutely. I think we can say the same thing about the airship wave. When we start looking at that, you might want to comment on the sort of the yellow journalism that was going on in the day, and the skeptics will say, well, these were just papers that were looking for subscribers.
Yeah, I don't know how many times I've written exactly that in my writing about the airship phenomenon. It's worth noting, however, that the airship phenomenon was international in scope. And there were specific problems with loose standards of journalism in late 19th century America. But there also were reports that seemed verifiable, that were described accurately, that were first-hand testimony by named witnesses whose existences we have been able to document. And in the foreign press, the British press, the press of Australia and New Zealand, where there isn't this kind of wild and woolly character, they're describing exactly the same things that people in the American Midwest and in Texas and elsewhere were reporting. And in fact, I was able to investigate from this perspective, from the 21st century, some late 19th century reports that are really rather extraordinary and document that the people existed, that they were people who had three solid reputations. One of them was a prominent rabbi in South Texas who reportedly encountered the occupants of an airship. And you can investigate these. And also, they were recorded contemporaneously. It was not like somebody telling you 50, 60, 70 years later, reconstructing something that he believed happened to him. These are people who are reporting this to the newspapers or writing letters to the editor. In other words, recording these stories as they happen. Now, there was exaggeration. There were stories that you encountered that were clearly not even meant to be taken seriously, that were constructed in the editorial offices of newspapers. I've been studying this thing since the mid-1960s, so I spent an enormous amount of time studying the press of the period. And you get a pretty good sense about it. But it was really exciting to me when I was able to document one of the most puzzling sightings, that the coverage in April 1897 was telling you more than it realized it was telling you. And it made it investigatable. And in about 10 years ago, I investigated it. And it's a very puzzling story. And it, to me, shows probably what was happening in those days, that the nature of it. And I was able to construct a hypothesis about the nature of the 1897 experiences from that.
That sounds really fascinating. And is that included in this updated version of the UFO Encyclopedia?
Yeah.
Fabulous.
There's an entry in it called Airship Sightings in the 19th Century. And there's a section in there on the Wilson sightings involving an aeronaut named Wilson. And I go into that and about my research and finding who the witnesses were and what their backgrounds were. I was able to demonstrate that one of the principal witness, that the incident, he died 2 years later, but the incident remained in his memory and apparently obsessed him until he died. The memory of seeing this airship landing and interacting with the occupants of the craft. So even some of the most extraordinary sightings seem at least true to the reporter's experience.
These involved humanoids, right? People that were essentially the same as us, from what
they weren't humanoid, they were humans. They
yeah,
like
exactly.
Anyway.
Yeah, they were indistinguishable from us if they were alien. So, I mean, that kind of suggests if there really were these craft, that there was some sort of maybe private company or rich people, you know, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen or something. How does that work out? What's your theory on it? Let's hear it.
Let's have the theory. Next segment, okay? League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, last film that Sean Connery did, right? More to come with Jerry, Gene, and Randall. You're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with ReputationDefender.com. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with ReputationDefender.com. Call 800-831-0771 now. That's 800-831-0771 for your free reputation analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with ReputationDefender.com. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-831-0771 to learn more. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771. Or visit ReputationDefender.com.